Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday afternoon. Before we get rolling on a really important and fascinating topic, let me tell you that we are in our, what is this, winter? It's kind of winter, kind of holiday, winter holiday pledge drive. So we're asking you, we'd like to get 15 callers this hour. If you like this show, and I know you do all that we cover, then you should go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And we thank you very much for doing that. David Umhafer is with us for this hour, and he has written a phenomenal, I was telling him, it's like I'm carrying a book with all that he has written. It's in Act 10 at 5 Journal Sentinel Special Report, and it covers so many different topics. It covers the fate of unions in Wisconsin. Since Act 10, their teacher discipline process is simpler, speedier, and more management-friendly. Union membership in the state way down. A very interesting piece for those of you who weren't around when Scott Walker came to power in the state of Wisconsin. It's a narrative of his path to power as well, back to the days of being a state legislator and also county executive. We will talk about all of that with Dave and hear your experience with unions in the state. And we'll do that in just one moment after I tell you a wee bit more about him and give you the phone number. Dave covers local politics and government as part of the PolitiFact Wisconsin and Watchdog teams, and his investigation into pension padding by Milwaukee County employees won a 2008 Pulitzer Prize and actually led to a complete change in administration of the Milwaukee County Executive Office. We're delighted to have Dave with us in the studio. We've also done shows referencing Act 10 and how it's affected teachers and school districts in the state of Wisconsin based on his reporting, so we're happy to have him with us. We welcome phone calls for Dave. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Hi, Dave. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's great to be here.
Yeah,
thank you, Kathleen.
Nice to have you here. We'll have you move just a little closer to the microphone. There we go. What a substantial body of work, and I'm sure Pulitzer, too, is around the corner for you. Let's just look generally at what has happened in the state of Wisconsin. You've written nationally, no state has lost more of its labor union identity than Wisconsin since 2011. That is extraordinary.
It was startling. I mean, Act 10 was obviously a huge change, but when we ran the numbers, Wisconsin ended up in the near the bottom third of states for concentration of union members, which is just given our history is amazing.
Yeah, and we'll talk about how it's affected public employees and teachers. Your piece on Scott Walker and how he came to power in Wisconsin is an important one because it really lays the groundwork for all that's happened since.
Mm-hmm.
It's an unusual path to become the first Republican to be county executive of Milwaukee County. How did that happen?
Well, you know, this was a piece I wanted to do for a long time. I think there's generally an underestimation of the impact of the pension scandal and, mm-hmm. and Tom Amon's administration. You hear people blaming Scott Walker for a lot of the county's problems. Well, the money ran dry because of the pension scandal, and it really opened up a unique opportunity for a young Republican reformer to come in there. I mean, the public, if you weren't around then, the public was really angry. People think, you know, the Trump voters were angry. Well, this was real, visceral, you know, gather 10,000 people in the street kind of anger. And he took advantage of that. It was really classic.
And tell us more what that pension scandal was.
Sure, sure. The county at that time took advantage of a number of things and changed the way pensions were calculated and made them generous really beyond all imagining. In fact, people are able to get, in addition to a really good pension on a monthly basis, are able to get lump sums of, you know, up to $1 million. So it was tremendously expensive.
Mm-hmm. And he came in then, and he won. He had good backing. He had people behind him. But also he had an administration that he was going to be a moral savior, really. He was going to be a moral guy and clean this up because there had been so many horrible things and people taking money, a lot of greed before.
Right. Kind of a white knight situation.
Yeah.
One of his ads early on was a picture of Tom Amon and the word Amon on the screen, and then the T disappeared, and it was Amen in a picture of Scott Walker. So he did sort of come in as a fresh face and, you know, really skilled politician even at a young age, and very ambitious, and jumped into this race. It was a very short race, and I think the other opponents were more the status quo folks, kind of familiar with government and more associated with the Democratic side. So he was kind of the guy who got all the other votes and really rode that to victory.
Mm-hmm. And when did he start looking at unions and the benefits union had that maybe he could cut so that he could figure out the budget?
Sure. You know, Scott was ideological at a very young age, and I think he had some negative impressions and thoughts about unions as he took the job at the county. And I think that was reinforced for him when he got there, because he wanted to make changes rapidly and cut the budget really fast and kind of clean up the mess. And he thought he could do it in 2 to 4 years. But the union contracts were in place, and the unions were extremely powerful and had great sway over the county board. So he wasn't able to move very fast at all. It was a quagmire, and it took years and years to dig out of the hole.
Mm-hmm. He also, and at what time did this happen, started doing a big layoff of workers, and people noticed because the parks weren't in very good shape. Mm-hmm. The courthouse wasn't in very good shape. His office wasn't in very good shape.
Right. Yeah, this was a showdown early on where they ran into their first budget crisis under him, and it came down to how could we get a savings here? Would workers want to take a voluntary furlough? And the union said no, and they thought he was probably bluffing when he said he would lay off hundreds of workers, but he wasn't, and he went ahead and did that. And from then on, the relationship between the big union, AFSCME, and the county exec was just awful, really contentious, and it spiraled downhill from there.
Mm-hmm. And did the public's image of unions begin to change as a result of that, what he said about unions?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There was a recession right around the time he took office. And then later on, of course, 2008, 2009, 2010, another huge recession. I think people began to look at public sector employees a little bit differently during that time period, especially on the benefits side, what retirement benefits teachers and other government workers had. It became more difficult for the unions to kind of sell their message, even among the political class. I think there was less sympathy. You saw that among some on the county board. Roger Quindell, very liberal, really broke away from the unions and thought that the unions had some culpability in the county's downfall.
Mm-hmm. So he decides at what point that he's going to run for governor?
Oh, probably when he was about 14.
Really?
Yeah. He had his eye on that for a long time, and maybe even higher. I mean, you hear about people who think about that. John Norquist was somebody who talked about being mayor of Milwaukee, you know, and he was 10 or something. And he was very ambitious and wanted to find a pathway to that. And I think when he was in the legislature, he started to feel like, how am I going to break out of here? He was in Wauwatosa. He couldn't really see a path forward. He talked about maybe being lieutenant governor. And then this county thing came up. And it just, the more he looked at it, the more it looked like a real opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And we went from, it was an enormous change, Dave. We had a Democratic governor. We had Democratic state legislature in the state of Wisconsin. And all, it seemed like overnight it flipped. Everything flipped.
Right. You know, there was a long history of shared governance. It was rare if you look at the last several, 50 years. It was just rare for one party or the other to hold all of the legislature and the governor's office. Doyle and the Democrats got it in 2009, 2010, and they really tried to put through a lot of their agenda. They did some stuff for unions that was quite significant. And when Governor Walker, it was really a national wave, though we should remember that was a Republican wave nationally in 2010. His timing was great. you know, when he lost the governor's race, when he dropped out in 2006, it turned out that Mark Green, the Republican candidate, got swamped in what was a Democratic wave that year. So, you know, Scott Walker's always been a great pundit and a great follower of the internal mechanics of politics, and whether it was a combination of luck and skill and predicting, you know, there's some combination there. But his timing was so perfect in 2010, and they swept in, and it's really been amazing to see that they've held that and held on to it now.
Mm-hmm. And he thought about getting rid of collective bargaining, public employee unions. He didn't campaign on that, did he? But it was pretty soon after he was elected that he took them on.
Right, right. I mean, this has been a contentious thing. He likes to say that he did campaign on it. What he did campaign on was he made clear that he would try to cut the benefits of state employees. Obviously, he went much further than that with virtually ending collective bargaining and making it very hard for the unions to survive. So it was a bit of a secret plan, a bit of a Trojan horse. Many people say that if he had campaigned on all that, he never could have gotten elected. So there's a practical side to it. I mean, if you actually lay out your entire agenda on that, there would have been an uproar.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about what's happened to teachers specifically as we continue. Dave Umhafer is our guest this hour of the program. He's done lengthy reporting on Scott Walker's rise to power and also Act 10. It's a five-part Journal Sentinel special report. And the fate of unions is really what it's all about and how he came to power. Dave is a Journal Sentinel reporter. He covers local politics and government as part of the PolitiFact Wisconsin and Watchdog teams. He won a Pulitzer, actually, for his investigation into pension padding by Milwaukee County employees, a little bit of which we've talked about as we started this hour. We'll be welcoming phone calls for him. 800-486-8655 is our number, but we have a very busy hour going on because we also have our listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio drive going on, and we'll tell you all about that just momentarily here on the Ideas Network. As you probably know by now, this is listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and KP Whaley is here with me in Milwaukee. It's our year-end membership drive, so if you've been putting off donating to WPR in the past year, now is time for you to take some action. If you have given, if you are a sustainer, make a special year-end gift, why don't you? It'll take just a few minutes, and here's how you do it. You go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's right. And last hour, we heard from 10 of our listeners. Thank you so much for those pledges. We have a new goal this hour, though, Kathleen. It's at 15 pledges by 2 o'clock.
All right.
And, you know, these goals are really set to make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money to pay for the programs that you listen to and that you really rely on. So help us meet our goal with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might think that we operate largely with tax dollars, and we do get funding from the federal government and also from the state, but you should know that listener contributions make up the single largest source of our income.
That's right. Your support is vital to keep WPR on the air. So now that you know how important your support is, please make a pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might already be a member or you're making your first pledge ever, but anyone can become a sustainer. Let us know what monthly amount works for you, whether you would like that to come from your credit card or from your bank account.
Yeah, I really like this option because it's easy, and once you set it up, your membership automatically renews, so you don't have to wonder, is it time to pledge or not? It's always making that monthly donation. So start your sustaining membership right now also. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This season of giving, let the impact of your pledge go beyond great radio to people in need throughout Wisconsin. Pledge $5, $10, or $20 a month to support your favorite radio programs and help feed those facing hunger in your area. Do two good things with your gift to WPR right now when you choose one of the food bank gifts at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And how often do you have a chance to do two good things in just a very short period of time? You can make your donation in support of the programs that you count on. Help those who need food. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Whether your pledge is $5 a month, $100 a month, we really do appreciate. And we also count on your gift. Whoops, gave my
there I am.
Oh, hey. There you go.
Kathleen, radio's hard, isn't it?
No, it's just I was making it hard.
But it is hard to keep up with the constantly changing world.
That's
and
true.
And it is hard to keep up with that. That's why, as a listener, you kind of tune in and rely on WPR to know what's going on, what's news, what's important every day.
WPR members make the updated news and information that you hear every day possible. It's what we do every single day here. So it's your turn to invest in the programs. Your contribution of $5 or $10 a month will keep the news and conversations relevant, interesting, and will keep them on the air. WPR needs your support. It's your membership that makes a difference. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, maybe you're like me and you tune into Wisconsin Public Radio every single day on your way to and from work. You listen to it on your lunch break. And then some more on the weekends, too.
So it's become an important part of your life, and your day would probably be different. It might not even be as good if you couldn't catch your favorite program. Your contribution keeps WPR this strong station that you count on month after month, year after year. We're celebrating our 100th anniversary.
Amazing,
next year,
it?
Which is a huge thing. Give now at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
As I said, we're looking for 15 pledges. We've got two already this
Thank
hour,
you.
So thanks for those. And you can make your gift to support this program and all the programs you enjoy and rely on every single day. Your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 really does make a difference.
You might feel like WPR is worth $1 million, but you don't have that much to give. You don't have to worry, because your gift of any amount, $5 a month, $100 a month, is the right amount for you to give. The important thing is to make that pledge right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we got another pledge, so 12
okay.
more to go in this hour. Please make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and it really helps.
And remember, you have a chance to do these two wonderful things at once. You can choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $5, $10, or $20 a month, and you pledge to us. Those are two really good things. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And again, now is really a great time to become a sustaining member. It's easy to set up. It's convenient. Ongoing monthly donation comes from your bank account or credit card, and you can get that started as well at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Jeanette from Sullivan puts it all in a nutshell. I listen to WPR daily and am happy to help pay for
it. That's how we like it.
That's how we roll, KP.
And your gift is powerful. It really does make a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for all your pledges.
Thank you. Thanks, KP, for all you do. Dave Unhafer is our guest. He's written an extensive many-part series on the impact, five-year impact of Act 10. During a nine-month O'Brien Fellowship in Public Service at Journalism, Public Service Journalism through the College of Communication at Marquette University. He also did a very interesting piece on the rise of Scott Walker in the state. We have calls coming in, so we'll go to some of them, Dave. The number is 800-486-8655, and we start with Dave in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Dave.
Hello, Kathleen, and hello to your guest. On this coming April Fool's Day, it will be 60 years since I started work with what was then the old State Highway Commission.
Oh.
Later, it became the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, and I worked there for 39 and a half years. The first 3 years that I was there, we didn't have union representation. The employees hired a lobbyist who used to go to bat for us with the legislature. We would normally be a political football for whichever party was running for was out of office and running. You could depend on that. One governor candidate who used to wear a red vest threat, didn't know how many state employees there were. He was going to take us all down and run us through the turnstile at Camp Randall to count us as though we were cattle. But we did get union representation. Prior to that, you could be given good assignments or bad assignments, or you could be laid off, or you could be hired, or you could be otherwise dealt with on the basis of perhaps the lodge that your boss belonged to, or the church he might have belonged to, or your political affiliation, or anything else that happened across his mind. There was never really anybody to go to bat for you. We finally got representation and had this man that calls himself our governor now gone to public employees and asked them where they could cut costs. There are thousands of them who would have been able to tell him, but he didn't want to do that. He had his mind all made up. This whole budget thing was a scam, and he laid it at the foot of public employees.
Thank you, Dave, for your call. Was there communication between the governor's office and public employee unions to see where costs could be cut, Dave?
Well, you remember right before the Act 10 was voted on that the unions made a play to, they said, we will accept your benefit cuts in exchange for you not eliminating collective bargaining. That was turned down by the governor, who pointed out that the state unions really couldn't speak for the hundreds and hundreds of local unions, and would that have ever come into play? Would they have agreed to do that on a union by union basis? So there was a real question about that. The caller talks about job security, and I think that's one of the selling points for unions was that kind of protection, and it really became strong and built up over time to kind of insulate them from the, you know, the whims of their mm-hmm. bosses and supervisors, and it really gave them a lot of freedom of expression on the job and power to speak up. So that was a big thing. A big selling point for them.
And tell me about the benefits. You spent a lot of time talking about teachers in many of these articles. Mm-hmm. The teacher benefits were substantial. There was a backlash, well, for some reasons, inexplicable, but a backlash against teachers because some were saying, listen, you've got health benefits. You can retire when you're 55 and get health benefits. You get cost of living. You get increases in your pay, and we're not getting any of that.
Right.
Why should you?
Right. This is an interesting area. Teacher benefits were really backloaded. You would start out at a pretty low salary. When I look back at 2010, a lot of the starting salaries for teachers were around $29,000, $30,000. And the idea would be that you would work for 30 to 35 years. A lot of the salary increases would come in the last 10 years where you'd really gain momentum. And then you would have tremendous, tremendous early retirement opportunity and tremendous retirement health care benefits, so that there was this backloading of the teacher benefits. And I think what the backlash really focused on was that those benefits.
Right.
And teachers would say, well, we gave up a lot in salary for many, many years to get those benefits.
Yeah. And what about the cloud of unions now? I know that there were some Republicans who outright said that, listen, if you can diminish the strength of teachers' unions and public employee unions who tend to go, and you write about the history, why this happened, Democratic and fund Democratic candidates and also have a get-out-the-vote campaign, then, you know, you might be able to lessen their strength and not as many Democrats are going to be elected.
Right. There were several purposes to Act 10. One was budgetary, but there was no doubt there was a political component to this, and you could see that in which unions they chose to mm-hmm. go after. And it worked. You know, the cloud of the unions has been diminished. They are still alive and kicking, but they've lost anywhere from 50 to 70% of their members.
Wow.
Their dues collections are down by 50% or more. They really were able to invest heavily in the recall campaign, but probably didn't have as much money left over for the 2014 governor's race mm-hmm. and the 2016 cycle as they normally would have. So you're seeing that influence in politics fade away.
And a lot of the people you interviewed who were union leaders said that they don't really see it coming back, do they?
Boy, you know, there's quite a bit of pessimism. I think that's in part because they don't see the Republican domination of Madison ending anytime soon. Although, if you look back at history, these things can change without much warning. But yeah, there's a lot of hand-wringing, a lot of looking back with 2020 hindsight among the union leaders and saying, what did we do wrong? Should we have given more concessions over the years? Were we too involved in political campaigns? I think there's a feeling that they sort of lived by the sword and may die by the sword. Mm.
Dave, thanks for your call. Steve is next. Hi, Steve.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is tied right to your previous response. There were, of course, some pension issues elsewhere, but there were also very many school districts that for years, such as where my wife worked, for years they offered the teacher, instead of a raise, we're going to pay a little bit more of your pension. So for this goes on for years, and then all of a sudden that's taken away. It's basically saying we're taking away your raises. And that particular fact just never, ever seemed to get any attention in the press. I can't say how many school districts were affected that way, but I don't think anyone knew that that's what was going on.
Dave.
Yeah, we hear that a lot, and there's some truth to that, that was the bargain that teachers felt they made over the years, getting smaller raises in exchange for better benefits on the backside. And I think that accounts for a lot of the shock that teachers felt when Act 10 came along, because they felt that their contracts would sort of go on forever, that they didn't even conceive of the fact that this could sort of be wiped away almost overnight, and that these promises that have been made to them over decades could just go out the window. So I think it almost didn't occur to even the union leaders that this would just disappear. And they always felt that there would be another bargain happening. But the caller's right in the sense that, you know, the back-end benefits, I think teachers would definitely say, and schools would probably agree, that that was the essential bargain, that they gave up a little bit more on the salary side.
And we'll take more phone calls for Dave in a moment. Dave Umhafer is our guest. He has done a whale of a job on a multi-part series in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on Act 5, Act 10, rather, at a five-year anniversary, and also on the rise of Scott Walker to power in the state of Wisconsin. We'll continue with him and welcome more phone calls. Steve, thanks for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. K.P. Whaley is with us in our Milwaukee studios, and we are also in our year-end membership drive on Wisconsin Public Radio. I know you count on us for in-depth talk of issues like the one that we're talking about right now, and we count on you to keep all of these conversations on the air. Your gift right now makes a huge difference. It is so important. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And we do kind of hate to interrupt these important discussions, but we do still need some more pledges. We have a goal of 15 this hour. We still have 9 more to go in just a little less than half an hour. So your support really does help keep WPR strong. It helps pay for the Kathleen Dunn Show. So make your gift to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You listen to this program for conversations like the one we're having this hour. We really do explore some very important topics.
And whether it's the interviews that we recently did with veterans or historical topics or national politics or international news, that it's getting enough attention elsewhere, you can get the information you need right here. So this kind of substance is really only possible with your support. So please make your contribution now. It's WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
I think many of us love working here because it is lifelong learning. Let me tell you, in the course of a week, we have gone to school.
Agreed.
And many of you feel the same way. So you can make a 9XM Leadership Circle gift of $100 a month, which would be a bargain for that amount of schooling, and provide an important piece of funding for the programs that we all rely on.
That's right. You can make that leadership gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A large slice of our budget pie, actually the biggest slice, is listener support. All of our funding sources, state, federal governments, businesses are important, but it's your contribution that makes a huge difference. We are the service that we are and have been for almost 100 years, thanks to you. Give now at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
I'm Sheree from Waupun. I will always care about the state of Wisconsin because of WPR. And that's a big thing for me to say. WPR has always been a positive experience. Even when it wasn't something that I necessarily wanted to hear, I always appreciate the opposite side. And I don't always understand the opposite side. I certainly don't always like it. But to hear it is important.
Make your contribution today because listener support makes Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Give now at WPR.org and click donate.
Or you can call 888-202-2552. KP Whaley is with me in our Milwaukee studios. We're asking for your support. This is our year-end membership drive. Your gift might be $10 or $20 a month. We thank you for whatever you can give.
You know, you can just name just about anything, and you've probably heard about it here on the Ideas
Anything?
Network. Just about anything. Maybe it's politics, maybe science, maybe current events, maybe the environment. Finances, there's a bunch. And it's a real valuable service. And it's really a service that's worth supporting, don't you think?
Absolutely it is. And you can make your support possible, $5 or $10 a month, by doing this. You go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you listen to WPR on your way to and from work every day, and sometimes on the weekends, you're actually listening to hundreds of hours over the course of a year.
Absolutely. If you've never given to WPR before, make your gift today. It will change your life. $5, $10 a month for hundreds of hours of listening. It makes WPR one of the best information and entertainment bargains you will find anywhere. Whatever you choose to give, it really does make a difference. It really does. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You know, a lot of my friends ask me, how much should I give when I pledge to WPR? And I always say, it's completely up to you. And that's the beauty of it. You can choose the amount, whatever works for you. But here's a suggestion. You might become a sustainer and make an ongoing monthly donation. And many first-time donors give $5 a month or $10 a month.
And renewing members give $15 a month, many of them. A growing number of people give $100 a month. It's completely up to you. It is. It's up to you. Just go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Nine more pledges in the next 20 minutes or so. So please help us get there. Help with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It is the season of giving. Support the radio you love and do something extra. I love this fact, what we're doing right now and we've done before. You can choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $5, $10, or $20 a month. Give now, please. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
It's a perfect time to give that gift, actually, isn't it? And if you're a sustainer, remember, we want to thank you. Your gift is already counted. But you can also make today the day that you increase your support of WPR by maybe $5 a month. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Amy from Mount Horeb says, KP, when I'm on the go, I rely on WPR for news and thoughtful, entertaining programming. And it always delivers.
It
That's
sure
the thing.
Does,
you know, every
it?
Day, here we are, every single day. We're
and people
always
are tuning
delivering.
In every day. People tune in the radio every day to
we
listen
love
to it.
To the radio.
Exactly.
I love the radio.
So now's the time to give. Please make your support.
All right.
WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks for those gifts.
Thanks, KP, very much. Act 10. At 5, a Journal Sentinel special report, and the author of the piece and many other pieces, too, Dave Umhafer, is with us this hour. hour, he has studied the five-year impact of Act 10 during a nine-month fellowship in public service journalism at Marquette University, and I'm sure many of you have read some of his very, very thorough and interesting series. We have a ton of calls coming in, so we're just going to take as many as we can. We go to Gay in, well, on the Illinois border right now. Hi, Gay.
Hello, Joy. It's been a long time since I talked to you. But anyhow, I was a victim. My job was a victim. I was forced to retire early, basically, by Walker when he came to power. So I'm not a very happy camper when it comes to anything having to do with him. And I think the state has suffered greatly. But I would like your guests to address two things in particular, and that is the role of ALEC, A-L-E-C, I'm sure he knows what that is, and the role of gerrymandering in keeping Walker in power.
All right. Thank you very much, Kay. Dave.
Sure. You know, I asked Governor Walker a couple weeks ago about the origins of his Act 10, and he's pretty sensitive about this point where people say that ALEC sort of gave him the idea, and ALEC being the business-funded group that generates a lot of the legislation, model legislation for conservative causes around the country. You know, the piece that I did on his rise to power was in part to get at what the origins were. And I think by the time he came to power, he had long since developed an idea that he wanted to go after Act 10. He had seen Mitch Daniels do this in Indiana. I don't think he needed ALEC to draw up legislation for him. You know, Act 10 involved putting a big X through a lot of the statute on municipal bargaining, so it didn't require a ton of brain power. They weren't really rewriting it so much as they were just getting rid of it. So the ALEC thing to me has always been a little bit of a red herring. On the gerrymandering, you're talking about redistricting. This is a very contentious topic and still being debated in the courts, obviously. I think it's a big factor. It's always been amazing to me that the public puts up with letting the politicians decide the districts, because it seems like such a thing that should be nonpartisan. But we've always done it this way, at least in my lifetime, and it looks like it will continue until there's an uprising over this. But it's been a huge factor, I think, in contributing to the election results. Just how much, I think, is debated, but it's definitely a factor.
Thanks, Kate, for your call. Peter is next in Sister Bay. Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Good.
Good.
I was just surprised when all the Act 10 things were going on that I never heard anything about using the power of a strike to, either apply some leverage or get more public interest, and not only by the teachers, but maybe more importantly, in support of the teachers and public employees by other public unions like firemen and policemen that I know were given protection when all that was going on.
Sure. It's an interesting question. You remember that the law enforcement unions were exempted from Act 10, so they were kind of caught in the middle where they wanted to be in solidarity with the other unions, but they also realized that they, in effect, their silence had been bought through them being exempted. Teachers, there was talk of a general strike. I think there was a lot of fear at the time. A lot of teachers obviously took a lot of time off to protest, which was, in effect, a work slowdown, if you will. But between the disbelief that it was happening and the disbelief that it would ever actually get through the legislature, and the fear over what the repercussions would be if it mm-hmm. if it went through, and could you then lose your job because of being on strike, I think that worked against it. And you remember how quickly it all happened, so there wasn't a lot of time. I think there were disagreements within the labor community over the idea of a strike, and it just was over in a matter of several weeks.
And focusing on teachers, because there are so many teachers in this state, you write in the lengthy series, in most districts, the job protections, low-cost benefits, predictable raises, and other benefits from decades of collective bargaining are on the way out or gone at this point.
Yeah, it's a major change. A lot of culture shock is happening. Teaching used to be kind of a stable profession where you could predict your raise. You were rarely, with seniority, you would be protected from layoff and reassignment. And you could look ahead 10, 20, 30 years and say, I'm probably going to be in this school, maybe even in this classroom. I can predict what I'm going to make. And that, a lot of that has gone out the window. I think changes have been kind of cautiously made by superintendents and principals. They like many of the teachers they have. They don't want to get rid of them. They don't want to push them to go to another school district, which has been a major, major change where teachers can now, they don't have the seniority benefits. There's no reason for them to stay in their district. They have a lot more reasons to
shop
leave.
Shop around,
yeah,
right? Make
can,
more money.
They can negotiate a higher raise, a higher salary at another district and get on that. If you're willing to move around now as a teacher, city to city, you can really do well for yourself if you are in a high-demand type of instruction or you're young and fairly inexpensive.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Jess next in Baraboo. Hi, Jess.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am fairly disgusted with this whole thing, but I haven't heard anybody talk yet about Walker's failure to increase revenue. I mean, you can balance a budget, which is a state law after all, and I agree with the balanced budget, but he seems to have great strength in reducing costs, and he seems to be pathetically weak in raising revenue. And I think we need to keep that in mind, that his greatest, you know, his failure all around, but I think his greatest failure is in his inability to raise revenue and be a salesman for the state of Wisconsin.
Well, I think he might say that charging workers more for their pensions is a way of raising revenue. But throughout his career, he has really been a staunch opponent of tax and fee increases. You see it now with him fighting Republican legislators over the possibility of a gas tax. He has just been consistent, and it's infuriated a lot of people over the years, including the Milwaukee County Board, against property tax increases and income tax increases. That's the revenue side of it, and he's been much criticized over this kind of slowly starving government. That's been his focus. He hasn't made a secret of it, and he continues to have political success on it.
Hmm. Thanks for the call. Dennis is next in Hudson. Hi, Dennis.
Hello. I appreciate you taking my call. I just wanted to say that when I first started working, I worked for American Can Company, and we were in a union, and the union stuck together back in that era. And the National Can Company, it was all over the country. And we went for like 3 years, and the costs were going up, and our health care and everything, and we weren't getting raises, and the company was making huge amount of money. And, of course, their profits, just like nowadays, are skyrocketing, record profits, and we're falling behind. So we had the right to go on strike. We went on strike. When we went on strike, we lost our paycheck, and we stopped getting our benefits. And when we went on strike, the Teamsters stopped delivering all their cans and stuff, so they honored our strike. So the company, they stopped making money. So both sides had an incentive to come to a fair agreement. And we didn't get paid for like 2 months. Mm. And finally they came to an agreement. It wasn't a big windfall or anything, but we got a raise that we could live with, and we got our benefits back, and the company was still making a huge profit. And that's happened all over the whole country. And I've worked in union shops, and I've worked in non-union shops. And I remember one time in a non-union shop, they were talking about getting a union because they had some disputes there. And the owner came out and he said, listen, I pay you more than the union shops do just so I have control over it. And if anybody thinks that the standard of living in this country came up from generosity or charity, it was from the unions. They negotiated raises, they negotiated benefits, they negotiated a 40-day work week, they negotiated overtime, sick leave, it's all going away. And no, you know what, if you read Forbes magazine and these different magazines, every year they brag about more millionaires, more billionaires, and then that Bernie Sanders come out and he said, like Wall Street, I've seen people that all that greed on Wall Street, when the economy crashed, I've seen people that literally killed them because they followed all the rules and they did everything right, saved their money, mm-hmm. and then they get in the stock market, then it crashed. And they were left where they couldn't even afford to survive anymore. So.
Yeah, thank you, Dennis, very much for your call. Many people have said, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are about this, that the decline of unions has really resulted in this economic angst that was the focal point of this past election and maybe the election of Donald Trump and the rise of Bernie Sanders, that you don't have strong unions to fight for a fair wage and... as a result, the wages have declined. Is that overstating the case for unions?
I think you're right. Donald Trump did address this, and it was, I think, one of the reasons that he was able to attract that kind of support. Look at the carrier plant announcement that he made. He didn't take an ideological left-right position on that. He spoke to the fact that people's wages have been going down for years and jobs going overseas, and that issue almost had been abandoned in terms of being front and center in political contests. The caller talked about the standard of living going up, and I think that was the argument that Rich Abelson, the AFSCME leader at Milwaukee County, always made, that their job was to provide these middle-class jobs. And Scott Walker always argued that, look, that may be the case in the private sector, but government's funded by the people, and our job is not to employ people. So that was always his comeback to that.
Yeah. Dave, a splendid job on reporting. We look forward to more of what you've done. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
It truly is a public service. Thank you.
Great.
Thanks for being with us. Dave Umhafer, he has studied the 5-year impact of Act 10. He's written a lengthy piece on the rise of Scott Walker in the state of Wisconsin. And you can find some of those articles on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Well worth your time. This is the Ideas Network. And I'm Kathleen Dunn with KP Whaley. We are in our year-end membership drive right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. And it is, I hope you know this, your financial support, the foundation for the conversation you just had and all the thousands of other conversations that we've given you on the Ideas Network every single day. Please make your gift right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And what a conversation it was. I think everyone that listened, you had their ear glued to the radio, because we still need some pledges. We have about five more people. We need you to go to the phone and make a pledge in the next few minutes here. Make your gift to support this program and all the programs that you rely on here at WPR at making a pledge, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
What an important conversation, and we like to applaud the work of terrific journalists. Dave Umhafer, one of those, the lengthy report on Act 10, this day has gone through a lot of changes in the last 5 years. He's documented them, and we're happy to talk about it here. But we do, we did aliens last week.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was fun, and maybe they'll come, and so we'll know more about what maybe to expect if they ever arrive, because we did a show on them. We just do so many. Think of all the political shows that we've done.
Especially this year.
Oh, my gosh. Just a wealth of information, important, substantive, kind of quirky. We have these conversations all the time.
And it's all so very important. And now we need you to take a few minutes to make that happen for us all that listen. You can make that hour, this hour, and many more hours possible with the choosing a gift of any amount to WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
And think about this. Maybe you can make a 9XM leadership contribution of $100 a month or more. Listeners who rely on Wisconsin Public Radio are the most dependable source of income for this station, and 9XM members an important part of that picture.
Yeah, help us stay strong and continue to grow with your leadership gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Around the holidays, you may have bought some strange gifts.
So I have a friend that loves butter, and I'm giving her a book about butter.
Not really sure what she expected me to do with the card table, and that's kind of a weird gift for a 7-year-old.
I did get a pair of socks from my cousin, except it was like 4 months late, which, it was a bummer to get a pair of socks in April.
This holiday season, consider a much more practical gift. Support Wisconsin Public Radio today. Your tax-deductible gift makes the radio service you rely on possible. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In just 1 month, there are hundreds of discussions on the Ideas Network. And when you support WPR with a pledge, you're making all those conversations possible. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Help pay for the programs that you depend on. We're looking still for 5 pledges in the next 3 minutes. So make your donation now to support the programs that you enjoy. WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
You've made a habit of listening to WPR. Now make a habit of donating. It's a really good habit, and you can get started on it today. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
5 more pledges right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It really does help.
And this pledge drive, you have a chance to do these 2 good things at once. You can choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $5, $10, or $20 a month. What a good thing. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And now is a great time to become a sustaining member. It's easy to set up ongoing monthly donations from your bank account. You can get started at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I hope you know your gift really makes a difference. WPR.org. 888-202-2552. Thank you so much, KP.
Thank you.
Thanks for all of your giving. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing the show, and to Katie Myris Cirrus for being with us on the phone this afternoon. News coming up from National Public Radio, and then we're gonna rock a little bit and talk about 45 very important songs in the last 50 years.